Yes, hello and welcome once again to the Fox Football Podcast. Great to have the company of two gentlemen. Happy to be in air-conditioned confines and out of the heat. Sydney today as we record this, it's about 47 degrees. Daniel Garb, you'd be used to that as a Perth boy. How are you?
I used to be used to it, yeah. Sitting on the banks of Perth Oval watching the glory back in the day when it was sweltering. But it's a bit of a reality check after 5 years in London, Adam. But it's a lovely summer. Hello to you all.
And Simon, it's just like a January in Salford, really, isn't it?
Yeah, well, 47 degrees Fahrenheit, obviously. But no, I love the heat.
Let's get into it. You love football, and that's the main thing. Yep. That's what we're going to talk about right now.
O'Neill delivers it. Oh, what a save by Vedran Janjetovic. Well, he might be getting booed by the Sydney FC fans, but the Wanderers supporters will be cheering him for that effort.
We'll start with the talking points from the A-League on the weekend, and how can we not start with the Sydney Derby? Great night. If you're watching on television, as much as we tried to do it justice through screens and audio, etc., just being there, what a buzz.
It was fantastic, yeah. I really loved talking to Paul Asprey before the game and listening to what it means to a father of a youngster about to play. And Tara spoke to Milos Ninkovic's wife, and you could tell what it meant to the people directly involved. And hopefully that gave the viewers back home some insight as to how big of an occasion it was. And the atmosphere was fantastic. The game, I thought, was pretty good. It was open. It just needed that goal, and it never quite came. The penalty shout early on, I felt sorry for the referee on that one. I thought he had his view directly blocked, as we showed on the coverage by Ryan Grant. And it's one of those unlucky ones for the referee. Otherwise, I think he would have probably seen it clearly. And then there was a lot of openings, but Vedran Janjetovic on the one side, and that was a great subplot to the game, wasn't it? Danny Vukovic on the other had pretty good games. And the guys in the final third just couldn't quite connect with the final ball or put away the finish that was needed to maybe open the game up.
Some terrific defensive performances. I know we sit here, Simon, sometimes and wax lyrical about attacking forces, which is fair enough because they're the ones that get the girls, get the goals, etc., etc. But the defensive performances of two young men, Paul Asprey's son, Jonathan, and also Aaron Calver, first up after about a year off. Mm. Fantastic.
I think Calver in particular, Jonathan Asprey, had in the first half one rush of blood that almost led to that goal that we needed. Bless you, Garby. Bless
excuse
you.
Me.
Bless
excuse
you.
Me. Sorry. Sorry.
You're all right?
Sorry.
The air conditioning.
Paramedics. I thought Aaron Calver, given his lack of game time, and I was told pre-game that he'd only played 2 45-minute halves of practice matches. So for him to get through 90 minutes was astonishing, really. And yeah. I am surprised that the Wanderers didn't maybe try and target him a bit more. Maybe they did. They just weren't able to get the ball in that area of the park. In terms of the atmosphere, the occasion, absolutely sensational. I'm actually, this is probably going to be a little bit controversial, but I'm actually sort of coming round to David Gallop's way of thinking about this fish where the fish are in terms of expansion. Not because I want to rule out regional Australia, far from it. But when you look at the buzz and the vibe that the derby matches give us and the hype in the media, and I'm going to come onto the media in a second, but
I don't doubt it.
You know, if we did have more teams, another Sydney derby, for example, another Melbourne derby, maybe, or a Brisbane derby, even. You know, these are marquee fixtures, and this is what we need. Unfortunately, it's far easier in a commercial sense to sell a Sydney derby than, for example, Central Coast, Wellington, or Perth, Newcastle, which we'll come on to later.
Interesting. I wouldn't mind seeing a Perth derby once.
Absolutely. One day as look, well. I'm not saying it should be, Sydney or Melbourne,
but yeah, it's Sydney Melbourne. Yeah.
It's I think it's understandable why David Gallop would, and I've always been sort of a bit wary of that, thinking no, it should be an equal split. But unfortunately, commercial reality dictates, doesn't it? And that sort of leads me on to my second point, if you'll allow me. well, I'm going to say it anyway.
Too bad.
On the same night, if we're being brutally honest, it's no accident that the cricket was scheduled for the same night at the same complex. Nope. And that's their right as a competitor. You know, they want to maximise their own returns. So we have to be, I think, a little bit smarter in how we play the media game. They designed that to try and keep the derby off the back pages on the Sunday, and they succeeded.
Yes.
Both the local papers in Sydney led with the cricket on the Sunday. Now, that's maybe because our game, was goalless and didn't have the usual drama that we see in derbies. But the big story on Saturday night was Vedran Janjetovic. and the abuse he got from the Cove, the snakes on the top of the goal. We've seen all the pictures. And yet, the Wanderers, in their wisdom, decided to impose a media ban on Janjetovic. Now, pre-game, I can sort of understand it. You want the guy focused on the game. Post-game, and it's not as if they lost 4-0 and the guy had a shocker. He had a damn good game.
Yeah.
And kept a clean sheet. And yet he was refused access. And Veteran, I know, was happy to talk.
Yes.
But he was refused by the club access to the media. Now, that is not only stupid, it's self-defeating. I don't know if Veteran had come out and spoken, whether we'd have got the back page anyway. But I know we'd have had a better chance. Mm. And, you know, this is at a time when football is trying to negotiate a free-to-air TV deal for the next few years. We've got to get with the program here. The media wants stories. And if we're not going to give them those stories, this is not Europe where football will be on the back pages anyway.
Correct.
They'll just go to another sport, and that's what they did.
Yeah, you're spot on. I agree.
I wholeheartedly agree. I can't think of another sport that would do that to a central villain or hero.
Yeah.
And say, no, you can't do it. Unless he's gone and whipped out a chainsaw halfway through the match and decapitated three opposition. I can't see how it is a bad thing to talk to the guy after the game about what he's just experienced. It was one of the great moments when the Cove threw all those snakes over, and it was one of the great moments when he just smiled at them and turned around and had a great second half. It was fantastic.
It was fantastic.
Peter.
It was. And, you know, you compare it to the BBL, and you don't need to get into that, but what we have over the main opposition at this time of the year in the Big Bash League is actual meaning. Oh, the Big Bash League is wonderful entertainment and it's doing very well, but you could lose by 10 wickets and you don't really care. The Wanderers and Sydney FC fans were so passionate about that game, and I was pleasantly surprised with the treatment Janjetovic got. Now, that may sound harsh, but for me, it was a sign of maturing in Australian
Correct.
Football. When I walked into the pub before the game, we did that cross on Match Day Saturday, and I saw the banner, Veteran, you snake. I was surprised. And then that coordinated and orchestrated this throwing of the snakes onto the net and the peppering of it. I thought, that's what you want in football. Fans to be so passionate about
Bang
a
on.
Player crossing yep. the town that you're willing to give it to him. And he dealt with it fantastically
he
as
was
well.
Superb.
Which was a great test for him because he played ever so well, looked really composed. And I thought it was a wonderful subplot to the game. It would have been capped off with the chat to Veteran after the game, which the Wanderers unfortunately denied us.
Oh, well, Wanderers, more than anything, never mind their media management. Geez, they need a striker. But in saying that, will the striker prove any difference? Because watching the game on the weekend, time and time again, we were down the Wanderers' end where our studio was for that second half, surrounded by the RBB. They were absolutely filthy at some of the decisions made by their players on the park. And you wonder whether it's by design. They're almost, to go down this path, they're tantric in their play. They build up, and then go elsewhere and do something else. There's no...
No, please continue this.
There's
thing.
No end product. That's what I'm getting at. And you have to wait a while. It would be so frustrating to be a fan
yeah.
of Western Sydney Wanderers to see that they get in some great positions with width and then they just...
Look, let's be honest. They're, you know, their best striker is obviously out suspended at the moment, Brendan Santelab. That's...
Yeah.
Not to say that he should have been starting, because he doesn't always anyway. The experiment with Kerem Bullitt failed. But they do need a striker. Lachie Scott has got huge potential, but he's only young. He's finding his way. I think once he gets one goal, I think he'll probably get half a dozen in quick succession. But, it's a glaring problem. They've fixed seemingly one issue at one end of the park with the arrival of Veteran. Mm. The missing link is a striker who'll put the ball in the net.
Wellington. Wow. Last night, as we sit here, Tuesday evening, Wellington belting Melbourne Victory. I mean, okay, they scored two late goals, but they were certainly the better side. Mm. Victory away off. Are Wellington going to make this run? There's a stack of teams underneath Sydney FC, and Melbourne Victory have shown absolutely no consistency whatsoever. They've shown a consistency to frustrate. And third and fourth, Brisbane, Melbourne City, they've just come off their form a little bit. There's a real opportunity here for a club if they get... do that five or six in a row, that they can just, as Bozzo once said about Alessandro Del Piero, capitulate them to the top of the ladder.
I'm sure he'll appreciate you saying that after he's just welcomed his second child to the world. Congratulations to Bozzo as well.
Yes,
just what the world Bozzo. Needs, another Bosnich. Another Bosnich male.
It's funny on Wellington, because when Ernie Merrick left, all you heard was plaudits and praise for the Scotsman after he departed the club. But you look at the way they're playing now and the way they played under Ernie, it doesn't look like they really were playing for the manager. I mean, they were really sluggish at times. We did some footage on the lab. We showed some footage on the lab where players just weren't tracking their opponents. There was zero work ethic at times defensively. Now, there's a real verve and energy about them. They seem to be playing for the managers at the helm at the moment. And
playing
they took
for contracts.
Maybe that. Who knows? Whatever motivates you. But they really took it to the victory early on. And I think it's tough at Wellington sometimes when the wind's swirling and it's a little bit colder and you struggle to come to terms with the conditions.
What a stupid place, by the way, to put a city. Just off topic a little bit. Like, Fannigan, why would you put a community in 50k an hour winds and sleet and rain and garbage, and this is in January, this is in the middle of summer as well, and build a city around it?
Do you not think that perhaps the fact that it's in the mouth of...
Don't care.
A body of water.
Don't care.
That was where they first sort of arrived.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, the easiest place to set up camp.
You've never been to a pub and gone, oh, geez, this is not the best one. Might go to the next one.
I love Wellington. Do you not like Wellington
as a city? I like Wellington as a city. I love the people. Just the geography of the joint.
Three quarters of where Simon's from is built on those sorts of environments.
What sort of environment?
Sleet, rain, cold,
shit
windy.
Weather. That's what it's
or you prefer this, would you? 45 degrees.
Yes.
Yeah. Where we basically turn into charcoal every time we stand outside.
Off topic. Sorry, yeah. Gabby.
Can we
continue.
Get back onto the Phoenix, please,
what was the topic?
They were very good. I think you speak to players who go to Wellington, they say sometimes it can take getting used to those conditions because it's so unlike the grounds you're playing in Australia where you get protected and the wind gets you and yeah. The Phoenix are obviously used to it and the victor were caught cold and never recovered.
Yeah, Kevin Musk will be filthy about that.
I'll tell you what, you know, this little period where they've gone to Wellington, now they have to go to Perth at the weekend. I know we'll preview the games later on in the pod, but you know, this could derail their premiership because they've then got to go back home and prepare to face Sydney FC and basically a do or die battle for the premiership, and now that they've slipped, you know, they've let that game in hand go without closing the gap on Sydney, all of a sudden the trip to Perth becomes so important, and they've lost a couple of players through suspension. Guerrier, Calfella, I know they've got replacements that are perfectly adequate, but you know, that this is a really interesting and crucial period for Kevin Moscott's team. They've got to bounce back against Perth.
Hear ye, hear ye. Simon Hill calls the end is nigh for Melbourne victory. Maybe. Perhaps. No, it's a fair point. Massive.
I'm not saying the end is nigh, but I do think it's important. And because of the travel, you know, we all know that, you know, they've got to come back to Melbourne, then they've got to fly to Perth. You know, it's a tough week for them.
Well, it makes a draw in Perth not such a great result if they get a result like that. A win is much
almost
more imperative all of a sudden. Adelaide's win, is it another false dawn? Or are we sick of trying to pick false dawns and dawns and proper dawns and no dawns?
I think it's harder than them. I reckon the secret...
Dawn chorus.
The secret to their performance against Melbourne City came from Ben Garuccio's comments the week before when they lost at home. And he said, we've got nothing to lose. We can't get relegated. Yeah. Let's just go out there and play. And I reckon they all went, you know what? We ain't going to make the finals now. We can't win the title. Maybe they can still sneak in. Who knows? But maybe that was their mentality going into the game against Melbourne City. Let's just go out there and have a ball.
I cringed when he said that, by the way, about we can't get relegated. That's the mentality of a team halfway through the season. That's annoying.
I know. But
don't want to get off topic. Sorry, go
buddy,
on.
But they played with freedom
against
Melbourne City. I thought they just let the shackles off and just went out and enjoyed themselves. And look what happened.
Yeah. Mark Hotching, what a goal.
Oh.
That touch from Sergi Guardiola true. For the goal was
fantastic.
Sumptuous.
Fantastic.
I know that
sumptuous.
I know that Sergi hasn't quite lit the league on fire and he should be doing a lot more, but he's got that in his lock. And I tell you what, there are a few players who do in the league. That was exquisite to go with the sumptuous line.
If you can call him Sumptuous Sergio.
That's Simon's
Sergei.
Job.
On no, you're in the lab on Friday night, aren't you?
Yeah.
You weren't in there last Friday. I found that after I threw you there in the pre-game show. It's Glenn Lauder. It's not Daniel Garp. Whoops. Melbourne
Guardiola,
City.
Guardiola, more pep than Sergi.
We'll get to him, funnily enough. You can go off your long
Pep
run
Guardiola's
again.
Guardiola's more Sergi than Pep at the moment.
Stop. Wait. Wait for it. Melbourne City. I've got a theory they're cooked. Physically a bit frazzled.
Evidence?
Evidence is with my own eyes, and that's all I need sometimes. I just think they're not playing with the absolute intensity they did at the start of the season, and that was as intense. Some of those performances, getting the ball back with the ball, Melbourne Derby first edition, case in point, was some of the highest intensity football we've ever seen in the A-League. And I think that if they're training the way they're playing, I think they've got to a stage where... Yeah, Bruno Fornaroli looks like he's got lead in his boots sometimes now at the moment. Mm. Unfortunately for him, he's trying his guts out. He's so got so much quality about him, i.e. the goal he scored a couple of weeks ago. But I just think that maybe they need a bit of a freshen up. Not telling the strength and conditioning guy what to do, but just not quite as zippy as they were at the start of the season.
I'll tell you what sort of summed their, not demise, because they're certainly not finished, but no. their slump is the disappearance of Fernando Brandão. He's not even starting at the moment. I think he started for the last two, three games, maybe once
after he got
last
suspended.
Three or four.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that's because of his fitness or because he's lost a bit of sharpness. I don't know. But, you know, you remember that early part of the season. I know he sort of divides opinion because of his theatrics, but, geez, he's a good player.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's a damn good player when he's fit and firing. And he's sort of disappeared off the radar. And I think a lot of his prompting helped the likes of Fornaroli in particular. Mm. But, yeah, they just seem to have gone off the boil, don't they? It's a strange one.
They've got enough quality.
Of course, they lost their coach as well, which doesn't help.
I think they'll be okay. They had that win against the Wanderers at home 2 weeks ago.
Scruffy win, though. That.
Scruffy, but I thought they played some pretty good stuff at times. A couple of their key players looked really good after that period where they'd gone five games without a win following the FFA Cup
triumph. They needed the win.
And I think Adelaide were just in one of those rare, we're up for it kind of moods, and they played pretty good stuff. And quite, this week's the litmus test at home to the Mariners. If they need to really produce some quality football and play them off the park, if they do that, then I think we can say that they're still in the mix well and truly.
And did you enjoy your Sunday afternoon up in Novocastria, Newcastle?
Absolutely.
Perth?
That was fun, actually. Mm. That was a really good game, apart from the fence collapsing, which was a bit of a worry.
Everything's okay there.
Yes, just bruising. But I thought it was a terrific game. And I think, Newcastle, even though they didn't win on Sunday, you can tell that they've got a lot more confidence and belief about them. They actually don't go into a hole when they concede, which they did very early against Perth. I mean, Perth, those first 15 minutes were absolutely sensational. Yeah. I think Robbie Slater said during the call, this is the best I've seen him play all season. Yeah. And then inexplicably, they just dropped, which is a worry for Kenny Lowe. I think particularly just, I don't know if you saw the same thing, Garby, because you're on the sidelines, but at halftime, Diego Castro sort of slinked off and looked totally disgusted with some of his teammates. And I don't know, you just sense that behind the scenes all isn't... Yeah. We know that they've got a great squad, very talented squad, but there's something not quite right at Perth. When they're on, they're brilliant. Yeah. They could win the championship. When they're off, they could finish bottom.
Yeah, well, it's clearly been a fractured dressing room for most of the season. They're starting to get it back now, but I'm sure not all of the problems are solved. And there's some issues there amongst the big personalities. But I tell you what, when Taggart, Keogh and Castro get going, that front three, they are very hard to stop. Castro is a wizard. I mean, I didn't have the privilege of watching him closely last year because I was away. Now I know what all the hype's about.
He was just as good then.
Yeah, what a fantastic footballer. And Adam Taggart, 4-5. I mean, once the golden boy of the A-League, 16 goals in a season for the Jets, started for the Socceroos against Spain, off to the UK. It all fell apart there at Fulham, of course. But he's rebuilding his career now, and he's in really good form. He could have put the game away at
2-2. That's what I'm saying. 5-5 it should have been.
It should have been. But he's still giving them a lot going forward right now, and I think they're a decent shout, Perth, to do something in the second half of the season. Andrew Naboot, what a gun, 4-5 for him as well. So some of the big stars were in pretty good form on Sunday. It was a good game.
Right, a quick one before we move on to a bit of Premier League chat. If you've got the top two that have broken away, if there's one team below them, and you can go all the way down to Central Coast if you want, I mean, third v 10th, it's a tight quality-wise competition. Depth-wise, some teams might struggle. There's one team to go on a run. If there's one team you'll pick, they're going to win five games in a row. Which one would it be?
That's a good question. Sorry, did you say outside the top four or the top two?
Outside the top two.
The top two. Well, I suppose you've got to look at the likes of City and Raw, haven't you? I mean, City's squad is as good as any in the competition. And by rights, they should be a damn sight closer to the top two.
Yep.
So I'd say City. Once they rediscover their mojo, they're perfectly capable of going winning four, five, six games in a row.
Gary?
Yeah, the Raw's one that you look at and you think they should be doing a lot better. They're in a bit of a slump at the moment. I think the Glory can. I think if they can just get on the right page off the pitch, and they're getting there slowly but surely, They've got the talent to go on a real run. But that's the key point. Can he get them all together? They're slowly but surely getting to that level.
He says as he takes off his Perth Glory scarf because the air conditioning is
No.
He's a true sand groper.
Very much a neutral. They'll always have a special place in my heart, but very much a neutral. I think talent-wise, they've got the ability to go on a bit of a run.
I'll go the Knicks.
Of course you will. As he puts his Kiwi passport back in his pocket.
Australian ambassador to the Wellington Phoenix. Spend some bloody money, will you? Premier League, guys. Let's get to the Premier League.
Liverpool, just wait.
I'll go to Garby on Liverpool, Manchester United. You, go back on your long run, all right? Go back to the fence, like last week. Garby, what'd you make of that? The change in tactics gets something out of the game for Manchester United, but geez, Jurgen Klopp was filthy that his side didn't get more out of that.
It was a great game. I mean, stark contrast to the meeting early on in the season between the two sides. I mean, Jose parked 19 buses and set out for a draw. This one was open, both sides end to end, and either team could have won it in the second half. I thought Liverpool played really well considering Nathaniel Klein was out, Joel Matip was out, Coutinho wasn't fit enough to start, and Sadio Mane is off in Gabon for the African Nations Cup. That's four players from your first 11 missing when they were in a bit of a form slump. To go against a side who had won 9 in a row away from home, I thought they played pretty well, the Reds. But United are a different team now to the side that started the campaign. And in the second half, they threatened a lot. Draw was probably a fair result. You know, fair enough to Jose for going the long ball in the end. I don't have a problem with it. I mean, he put Fellaini up there. He won the header that led to the goal. That's Zlatan tucked away. So
it's become an insult these days. Jurgen Klopp saying they went long at the end as if it's almost...
It was interesting.
Despicable to even contemplate.
His interview, you watch interviews sometimes and you know what are the things in the back of a coach's mind that he wants to push out there straight away with, like, set an agenda. And halfway through a question, the interviewer was trying to say in a nice way, yeah, they lumped it, didn't they? He was trying to dance around it. And he goes, ah, the long balls. Yes, the long balls. So he's on the front foot trying to get it out there, and it is an insult. But I've got no problem because it's still football. It's not as if you're putting on shoulder pads and making the ball in the shape of an egg and starting to play rugby league. It's still the game.
It's snobbishness.
Yeah.
The issue is if you do it for 90 minutes, then you all of a sudden ruin your style of football that you want to implement long term. But if you bring a guy off the bench and you try and find the equaliser that way, well, fair play to you. I loved the stoush between Jurgen and Jose. I thought that was great on the sidelines. And it's very rare that you see Mourinho on the back foot in one of those instances. Usually he's the one sitting. Klopp was towering over him. Yeah, Mourinho was almost backing away at times, which was interesting.
As feisty as Jose is, it's a bit like a Portuguese Chihuahua up against a German Shepherd. There's only one winner in that regard, and he's a big unit.
Is this sort of the latest stoush that Mourinho will have? You know, he tends to pick his targets, doesn't he?
I think
Klopp was actually started it more than Jose did.
I think Klopp's a different character. I think he's too feisty for Jose. He never took on Sir Alex Ferguson. He takes on Wenger because he thinks that he can get at him.
Agreed.
He thinks, he's got a few personality traits that I can
Benitez,
just dance
he
on.
Always targeted. He thought, Benitez won't bite back. I can keep going at him. Klopp, I agree. I don't think he'd be game to get in a stoush with him. And I think he really rates and is wary of Klopp deep down. Pochettino, I don't think he'd ever go, which is interesting. But Liverpool now, away from home since Klopp joined against the top six, haven't lost, which is pretty impressive.
Righto. In off the long run once more. Here we go, Garby. He's got 1 minute to bowl this delivery, by the way. Here he comes. Simon Hill bowling to Pep Guardiola. I've got a fair idea a bounce is coming. Go. One minute from now.
Phil De Freitas.
Go.
Well, Pep, you've got some issues to solve, haven't you? Let's be honest. And I thought that display against Everton was abominable. The defence is all over the place. We are midway through January. There is still no sign of any players coming in to replace what is clearly a very brittle centre of defence, and fullbacks too, if you ask me. The goalkeeper, how you can swap Claudio Bravo for Joe Hart, I've got no idea.
30 seconds.
The basis of a good goalkeeper is being able to save shots with your hands, not playing out with your feet, and he can't do that. The attack is toothless. Aguero, an honourable exception. Pass, 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 halfway line, turnover, or get caught in transition, goal. And that's been the pattern for weeks and weeks on end. He is a superb coach. Far be it from me to give him advice. But please, the Premier League is a little bit different and he's going to have to learn quickly. We'll take not winning the championship. We might not take missing out on the top four.
That wasn't a bouncer. That was a yorker. That was just peppering off stump, I think.
Peppering.
Pardon the pun.
A dangerous outswinger. I think he's coming to terms with the intensity of the Premier League. You don't get any respite like you do in Spain or Germany, where you could be up 3-0 and you can maybe take the foot off the pedal and get through and start thinking about subconsciously next week. I mean, it is brutal week in, week out, and maybe he's getting used to that pep a little bit more.
I'm just sick of seeing... You know, they kept putting this stat up on Saturday night. 77% possession. 81% possession. 90, you know, 100% possession.
110.
So what? If you're not moving over the halfway line, it makes no difference whatsoever. There's got to be some end product. And at the moment, there isn't any. And teams have worked us out. If you catch us in transition, if you get in behind the central defenders or the fullbacks, we have no answers.
It's quite simple. Sorry. These players at Manchester City aren't as good as the ones at Bayern Munich and Barcelona.
Well, there's that as well.
Why isn't he going out and buying one or two?
They're still good players. Aguero, De Bruyne, Silva, like, they're still top-class footballers. I don't know about that. I think he's adjusting to the Premier League still. I mean, obviously, it's not Messi and the rest, but, you know, which other team in the world has all of that? Look, credit Everton, because if I was a Toffees fan, I'd be saying, hang on, give us a mention, please.
Yeah, yeah.
They were excellent. Tom Davis, that youngster, what a goal that was. Terrific. They got some really good kids.
And Lukaku scores against us.
He's a fantastic
striker. Shouldn't he be fronting a pub rock band or something like that? That Tommy Davis?
Yeah, he looks a bit out of place.
Looks a bit of a rogue, doesn't he?
But huge win for them. He's changed their formation, Koeman. Three at the back as well. And nice
quality.
Yeah, they're a fair way off the top six. But
Top manager.
They're a very good side.
Normal.
Where's Kenny, by the way? His brother.
Kenny's moved overseas.
Where?
He's gone to Indonesia to start the nutmeg farm.
His brother...
Continuing the family tradition of the Dutch East Indies.
His brother is actually Erwin Koeman.
Ronald.
He's actually Erwin Koeman. So Kenny's off there. But I've actually interviewed him before, Erwin Koeman, because he used to coach Tommy Yorke, Adam Sirota and Michael Zullo at Utrecht.
Did he like nutmeg? quick word on Spurs.
They were brilliant. I mean, West Brom, you look at the ladder and you see West Brom in the top half and you think, tough side to break down. They'll be well organised. Tony Pulis football. Hopefully we can jag one early and put them on the back foot. Maybe win 2-0. We'll have to be wary on set pieces. Spurs won 4-0. It could have been 15, and that's not an exaggeration. It was Harlem Globetrotter football at times.
Harry Kane and Dele Alli.
Oh, what a combination. Two. And that ball from Ali for Kane for the fourth was just, you know, straight off a Hollywood script.
I thought you were going to say sumptuous again.
I don't do the same gag twice. They were sensational. And it was six in a row for them now, including the win over Chelsea. They are the form team in the league, up to second.
And they play us next weekend.
Oh, you're dead, mate.
Spurs fans in heaven right now.
Quick word on... Not a quick word. I shouldn't be flipping about this. Go as long as you like. About a man that you knew. What a genuine human being he was, Graham Taylor.
Just want to pay a little tribute to Graham, who I was fortunate enough to work with for 12 months when I was at ITV back in the early 2000s. And a nicer man in football you could not wish to meet. He didn't deserve all the lampooning that he got from the UK media during his time with England. Yes, I know he didn't achieve what he should have done, and he was very rueful about that. But he was just a superhuman being, treated everybody the same. And his football achievements, apart from with England, you know, were pretty damn good. So he got Watford from the bottom division up to the top. He led Aston Villa to the runners-up spot. Went back to Watford for a second time, got them promoted again. He was a smart man, but more importantly, a really, really nice man. And my thoughts go out to his wife, Rita, and his family.
I'm forever indebted to him because he helped bring through my favourite footballer of all time, the great John Barnes at Watford. Everyone spoke very highly of him when I was in the UK, Graham Taylor.
Nice
chap. A sad week.
What did he think of the tabloids?
He saw it as part of his job. I don't know if you know, but his father, Tommy Taylor, was actually a journalist for the local paper in Scunthorpe, where he grew up.
Oh, yeah.
So he knew the media, he understood the media, and he never, I'm not saying he never got riled by it, but he always knew that the media were there because that was their job. Yep. And if he failed, he knew he was going to get criticism. I think probably the fact that they put a turnip on his head wouldn't, you know, hurt him, because it would have affected his family. I think that's where he felt it most. But he always, as far as I'm aware, I don't think he ever turned down interviews or stormed out of press conferences. And if you remember the great documentary, Do I Not Like That? That was typical of the man, that he would allow the cameras that privileged access in what turned out to be an horrific failure. I mean, he didn't know that at the time, obviously, when he agreed to do it. But
it kind of sums up the guy that halfway through coming,
he would have seen it as being part of the job.
But he didn't can it halfway through, thinking, oh, this is not going well. You guys out. Sorry, I can't deal with this right now.
He wouldn't have done that. And all I can say is, so when I worked with him in the media at ITV back in the day, he was hugely helpful, and he treated the tea lady in the same way as he treated Paul Gascoigne. He always had a word and a smile for everybody. Who's a superman.
Nicely put, Simon. Thank you for those tales. Let's move on now with very interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah, these are our things from around the world of football that we've noticed, we've picked up through the week. Mind if I go first?
Please, you've got a big issue to touch on.
China, as a certain president would say. He's been sworn in now, I think. China. They've changed their rules mid-transfer window, which kind of sums up Chinese football. Apparently, the government not happy about the fact that, they're sponging off us around the world. We want more locals on the park in Chinese Super League games, which is completely fair enough to do it halfway through a transfer window, as Andre Villas-Boas, one of the big-name coaches over there, has put it as ludicrous ridiculous, probably a fair enough description, because why you do it halfway through when everyone's shaping their plans for the upcoming season, which starts in two months, remains to be seen. But this has big ramifications, doesn't it, for Australian players? So they've basically scrapped their, you got to have one AFC, Asian Confederation player, in your midst. You can just go five flat foreigners, but only three of them can appear in a game, be it starting or substitute. So it's changed from how, I think it was three on the pitch or four on the pitch now, but you had to substitute one for another. If one wanted to come on, you couldn't end up with any more, right, a certain quota. So, it's shaped it somewhat. They're still going to target their big names. Diego Costa, the guy who runs what was Tianjin Teddy, I don't know what they changed, the Tianjin Teddy Bears or whatever they are now, he's got money to burn. He just wants to go out and get a Diego Costa. So apparently that was on the offing. That's why maybe Costa's had that blow up with Chelsea, that it was all lined up, but now everything's kind of, whoa, hang on a minute, we've just got to wait and see here. They've changed the rules around. You've got to have one Chinese-born under 23 player on the pitch at all one time. Villas-Boas, going back to him, he said that that's just going to create a bubble, so that you're going to be paying stupid money for a talented young Chinese player, so it's going to create a change in economics there. But what do we make of all this, guys? The shifting, taking off our Australian hats, and it means less opportunities for Australian players.
I think it'll be better for us long term. Maybe harsh to say on the players, and they may miss out on some squillions, but it may mean that we get more of our top line talent playing in the A-League or staying in the top leagues in Europe, which is where we can watch them week in, week out, which we would prefer a little bit more. But I think it makes sense for China because, let's be honest, players were just taking advantage of the riches on offer, and we're happy to go there for a couple of years, and we're open about going there for a couple of years, taking their money and leaving. You never hear a player going to China and saying like they do when they come to Australia or the MLS, saying, I want to contribute to the game here, I want to help create a legacy, I want to get the next generation, I want to take football to the next. In China, you never hear that. You just say, I want to go there and basically take the money. They're pretty open about it. So
fill my pockets.
Yeah. Why would the Chinese Association want to keep on encouraging that? The government's poured in tons of cash. They've never gone, hang on, you're giving this all to the players for ridiculous amounts. We're changing this. We're going to go to the next level. We need to actually develop football moving forward. And this rule change is born from that.
I think also there's a second part to this that people aren't aware of. They're not just chucking money at the top level and the players, the overseas players. They are also investing hugely in their academies and the
schools as well.
Schools and all that sort of stuff. So obviously they want long term a place for those youngsters to play. This has all come from the president. I'm afraid I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but is it president or prime minister? Or first minister?
He's the imperial leader.
Xi
Jinping, I think his name is.
Yeah, that's it. He's a massive football fan. He wants football to develop because, football is the avenue to greater riches elsewhere. As we see, this is why, you know, countries with lots of money get involved in football. It's almost to do with trade as much as sport in itself. So he's encouraged this investment. Obviously, it's a lot of the owners have gone a little bit crazy with it.
But I think this
is just more of a refocusing towards, okay, let's not forget the long-term goal, and that is to get China to a World Cup. They've only ever been there once.
Yeah.
A few of the Australian players that are over there have absolutely no idea what's going on. The sediment is still settling on the seabed after this particular decision. But apparently James Holland, he's signed, and he's hopeful it's all good. But, yeah, who knows? I mean, it's just in limbo at the moment, and contracts can be cancelled on a whim over there.
It's funny, I got a mole map yesterday, which I encourage everyone to do, a mole map where they check your spots from the sun, which is important to do in Australia because it's really hot here. So I encourage everyone to do that as well.
Apparently.
The sun's really dangerous, I should have said, over here. More dangerous than anywhere else in the world. So you should get yourself
checked. Everything's dangerous here.
And a Chinese lady did it for me. It took about an hour. So we're having a long chat and spoke about football over there. She says, I hate football in China. And I said, why? And she goes, because there are so many poor people and they spend billions and billions of dollars on this game and they should be putting it elsewhere. Anyway, that was an interesting angle from a person with a local interest.
You know, that was similar in Brazil, wasn't it? The World Cup a couple of years ago. Yep. A lot of people were very angry about the money that they spent when they need hospitals and schools and all sorts of things.
Yeah, have you seen some of those stadiums now?
Yeah, white elephants, to say the least.
Ridiculous.
Dust bowls.
Quick mention before we move on. This is very interesting. It's a very long, very interesting. The 4+1 rule that's going to come in about 3 years' time for the A-League. We happy with this? We cool with this?
Yep.
Instead of 5 flat foreigners, one has to be an AFC player.
Well, can I do my very interesting now then? Is that all right?
Yeah, go.
Because
is it linked, is it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I want to pick up on this. It's my weekly plug for my column. Website.
I was waiting for it.
Which I have written this morning.
Well, Garby's done a couple of plugs for the lab, so.
Yeah, why not? So it's partly about the 4+1 rule, partly about our colleague Mike Cockerell's call for Australia to move back to Oceania, which, sorry, Mike, I've got every respect for Mike as a journalist, but this one has totally befuddled me. Yeah. Why on earth Australia would want to move back to Oceania? I have no idea.
Well, so you'd rather us join the KFC than the OFC?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a strange viewpoint to put forward. I know why Mike's putting it out there, because he feels that maybe World Cup qualification would be easier back through the OFC.
And he's in love with Roy Krishna.
And, you know, we'd get the money from every 4 years qualification. But, you know, seriously, we made a decision 11, 12 years ago. We can't just keep chopping and changing Confederation for a start. Why would we want to?
But also,
why would you swap Japan, a game against Japan, for a game against Fiji?
But also, if we can't qualify for the World Cup and Asia will have 8.5 spots, we don't deserve to be there anyway.
Oh, yes, exactly. So
we've got to get Cockerell on the pod soon. Yeah. Absolutely.
It was a strange one. And look, just on the 4+1, I'm in favour of it because we are still new to the AFC. We do still have to tread carefully.
Yeah.
This is one of the things that we can do that is relatively painless to show that we are integrating. And quite frankly, our clubs do need to look a little bit more at Asia. We pay Asia lip service. Every few years when it's the Asian Cup, we go, oh, we love being in Asia. You know, we love Asia. We love Japan. We love Korea. And then for the other 3.5 years or whatever, we ignore it. We don't take any interest. In fact, we look down on it, if we're being perfectly honest.
We're better than them.
We're interested in European football and South American football. We're better than Asia. Well, you know, you can't just keep having this one-way relationship.
No.
And I'm sorry, but Greg Griffin's comments, on behalf of the other A-League clubs, it must be said, saying that having more Asian players will dilute the quality of the competition just underlines that. It's hugely arrogant. And I'll put in the column today a few examples of, you know, players like Shinji Ono, like Said Mohammed Adnan, like Ali Abbas, like Byun, like Song Jin-hyung, Junpei. You know, all those players have contributed pretty well. Yeah, there have been some duds, but the same from Europe and South America. So I think that's a total load of rubbish, and it's a smokescreen to try and get more money out of the FFA from the TV deal as well.
You just want like a big name Thai player like Chit Chit Bang Bang or something like that. I want to hear some of your Thai pronunciations again.
Shanathip Songkrasin. I'd love him, but I don't think we could afford him. But
no.
Again, the final point that I'm making in this column today is that, you know, it's only 2 years ago that we welcomed Asia to our doorstep with the Asian Cup. What a brilliant tournament. And all those communities turned up en masse to watch the games. What have we done since then to try and not only attract but keep that community.
Why wouldn't you get a big name Iranian player?
Of course.
Like, imagine that.
I don't know if they're affordable, but I do know that, you know, the clubs need to pay a little bit more attention to the region on our doorstep, because you know, if we're arrogant about this and we dismiss it, well, you know, we could be thrown out back to Oceania. Never mind choose.
Gabby, you're very interesting.
Mine is very short. It centres around this man.
He'll have done it in good faith. You know, he's not going to go, fancy Newcastle tonight, because he's got a, you know, a quadruple bet to get up.
Kenneth Lowe in rare form. And when Kenneth Lowe is in rare form, that makes life very interesting, doesn't it? Because he is one of the greats. And, yeah, it was a lot of fun interviewing him on the weekend when he said that, yeah, the penalty was very soft. The little man in the middle might have had an influence. But it was in good faith. It's not like he needed Newcastle to get up for his multi-bet. Which was a ripper line. And then on Shane Lowry, he said he's as honest as the day is long. If he's going to kick you through the TV, he'll tell you first. So there's no way that was a penalty. And he said Martin Nordstrom's gone down like Greg Laganis. So how was it a pen? It was zinger after zinger from Kenny on the weekend.
You know, his son, Rory Lowe, is a professional comedian.
Really?
Yeah, he tours around Australia. We should all go and watch him.
Yeah.
If he's half as funny as his dad, I reckon he'd be brilliant. So
outstanding. Let's now get to political correspondent breaking news time. Simon, over to you. What have you got from the halls of power
from
in the world of football?
The halls of power. Oh, just another little typical story from you know, the upper echelons of the game. Issa Hayatou. I don't know if you know that name, but he is the head of the Confederation of African Football and has been since 1988.
Oh, that's a surprise.
This will be a doozy when he's been in power since then.
When Garvey was still in short pants and was speaking in a high voice.
Running around in Cape Town.
Exactly. He is seeking re-election for what would be an eighth time.
Democracy.
He is actually being challenged, though. This is a rare departure for Africa. He is being challenged from a guy from Madagascar who unfortunately has also got a rather dubious past.
The meerkat from Madagascar?
In the same week that Hayatou has announced his candidature again, he's just been referred to prosecutors in Egypt for abuse of power, selling rights to CAF tournaments without fair and free competition for the tender. There's a shock. This was the guy who stood in for Sepp Blatter after he was removed from power. It's good to see that the upper echelons are stocked with such fine, upstanding gentlemen.
It's not too far away, is it, the Africa Cup of Nations?
It started.
Oh, it's already started. Yeah, sorry, I missed the start of it. Has it been on? It's on Foxtel, isn't it?
I think it's on BN, yeah.
Yeah, it's on BN.
I was worried about this segment, whether we'd have enough to get through the entire season. FIFA just keeps on giving you gold every single week.
Every week, just Google FIFA. There we go. Easy.
Well, I was actually talking to someone last week, and they said, why have you got Simon's political correspondent in each week? And I said, well, I had to give him a segment to himself because he'd just bring it up throughout the course of the... So I thought, we've got to put it in one place. So it's not there the whole time. But yeah, fair enough. Ghana beat Uganda today, 1-0. Who scored, I wonder? It's taking its time. Andre Ayew.
There you go.
Yeah, scored the pen.
The Black Stars. The Black Stars of Ghana.
Uganda. So,
some of the best fans in the world.
Oh, and the goal celebrations are the best year in, year out.
Oh, it's manic football.
Yeah.
Sometimes discipline goes flying out the window. We don't mean to typecast them, but it is sensational to watch. Mm. So I can't believe it hadn't already started. I think I know what I'll be doing.
I should give you another very brief Cup of Nations story for 98. So the first game... The first game I watched in this particular group in 98 was Ghana against Tunisia, and Ghana played Tunisia off the... I've never seen such a dominant display by one team. They were sensational. This was the team that had Sami Khedira, if you remember him, from Bayern Munich, the great Abedi Pele, Peter Afurikwai, Lamptey.
If you
remember Lee Lamptey.
Yeah, of course. He was like the next sensation in world football.
They were absolutely brilliant. Beat Tunisia 2-0. It should have been 10. And the next day, they fell out over money, lost the next two games, went home. It was just incredible. I could not believe it. They were a shoo-in to win it.
It was probably to do with the fact that they had a delegation of about 700 at the tournament.
But that was the problem. A lot of those, you know, nations. Was it you in Victoria where the Cameroonians fell out over money? Well, there's always somebody siphoning it away and trousering it. And
the best story about Cameroon was from that World Cup that they actually got on the plane in Cameroon, but stayed on the tarmac because the players blew up on the tarmac about what what their percentage was going to be, and there was a really lengthy negotiation, and eventually they got there. And
That summed up Neil Lamptey's career, though, because he was the next big thing in world football, then it all fell apart very quickly.
Yeah. Let's move on now to our predictions.
What's your prediction for the fight, then?
Prediction?
Yes, prediction.
Pain.
Prediction time. Another long weekend of football starting on Thursday. Mike, that... When I say long weekend, it makes it sound bad. It's actually a good thing that it's a like
it's
a
terrific
public holiday.
Almost got a game weekend. A day at the moment. Yep. Haven't we?
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday football coming your way from the Hyundai A League and also the Westfield W League on Sunday. But we'll start with the A League Thursday night, Melbourne City Central Coast Mariners, and then Friday evening with kickoff from 7 PM Eastern. It's Sydney and Adelaide. Saturday night, Wellington, Brisbane, Perth. That imperative game, imperative fixture for Melbourne Victory, and then Sunday afternoon out at Campbelltown, where Garby. You better be hoping, pal, that it's not a day like today out at Campbelltown, where it could be well 43 degrees.
You're going there as well, aren't you, in Campbelltown on Sunday?
No.
Oh, you're not doing that.
I'm
it's Speedy. It's Speedy
I'm in
doing
Perth
that one.
This weekend.
So Western Sydney, Newcastle on Sunday
afternoon.
Go to
your hometown.
Enjoy. The Perth. Long drive out to...
The Perth glory.
To Western Sydney.
I was going to say, it's more than a long drive to Perth.
You better leave after this. My prediction is that the Wanderers will win because they have to win against Newcastle on Sunday. It was, as Tony Popovich said post-game, a nice little step, the derby performance. If they don't capitalise on it, they're in trouble because they're sitting eighth right now. It's not good enough. And they need to build on that performance. Defensively, they look better. They need to start scoring goals. I think they will win on Sunday, but gee, they have to.
Simon?
My prediction is that Melbourne City will get back to not just to winning ways, but to something approaching best form against the Mariners. Let's be honest, they have to. If they don't beat the Mariners, their season is in all sorts.
Yeah.
I know they've won the Cup, but they should be up there challenging for the league. So this is the biggest... I know it's obvious because it's the next game, but in the context of their season, I think a lot rides on Thursday night for Melbourne City. If they don't win that, wow.
Indeed. My prediction, after bagging the garbage out of Wellington's weather, it'll be 26 degrees and a light nor'easter in Wellington as the Phoenix take on Brisbane Roar on Saturday evening.
Did you just check your weather app then?
No, I didn't actually. I'm not very hopeful though of that actually coming to fruition, but I will go Wellington to beat Brisbane.
How long before he's the number one ticket holder there at the Phoenix people? Can't be long.
Yes, I think he's already got the yellow fever scarf.
Well, I need balance on match day Saturday, given another certain panel
that doesn't
appreciate the Wellington Phoenix as much as other people. But,
are you a fan of having Phoenix in the competition?
I'm undecided about that, because on pitch, they're fans. I'm a fan. Mm. But Rob Morrison and his board need to pull their fingers out, because what has changed since they got the rocket up their backsides just over 12 months ago is barely nothing. In fact, they've regressed.
That's a fair summation.
That's not good enough. That is simply not good enough. So that board needs to figure out what that club wants to be, because if they keep going the way they're going, in 4 years' time, we're going to be having the exact same discussion as we had last season, which is unfortunate for all the players, families, and also all the fans of that club. But, hey, they've been given a warning, and they haven't listened to it, it seems, so far. Anyway.
It was nice meeting Jordy Boyce yesterday, Sydney FC's new signing.
No, Boyce.
It's Jordy Boyce. Jordy Boyce.
Jordy Boyce, the new Dutchman, is coming to replenish the defensive stocks of Sydney FC. He comes with a reputation as a dead ball specialist.
Well, I hope
he's not the next Christian Sarkis, who was a set piece specialist who never scored from a set piece. Hopefully he can do a bit better in that regard. But he was a nice man, and looks like he'll add a bit to the dressing room, and hopefully on the pitch as well.
Was his English pretty good?
It was very good.
That's good.
Had he met Kenny? Was he a fan of Nutmeg?
He had a
Kenny Koeman?
He's had a good career, though. Yeah.
A journeyman. A Dutch journeyman.
He's played some pretty good clubs in the Eredivisie.
Eredivisie.
Yeah.
NAC Breda.
NAC Breda. Yeah. Nijmegen.
Are there any consonants in that name?
It's all about the phlegm. Which is why, you know, next door is they're called Flemish.
Yes.
Because it spills over the border.
And he brought along his missus as well.
His missus?
Yeah.
Yes. Mrs. Boyce.
Gentlemen, thank you. Good luck to Jordy when we see him out there. And good luck to you guys over the weekend. Thanks for listening.
You too, Adam.
We'll catch you next time.